Save big on your landscape project at Menards. Whether you're shopping for edgers, pavers, or wall blocks, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Build a beautiful border for your landscape with our interlock edgers on sale now through March 22nd. Save big on landscape block at Menards. Also, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on your landscape project at Menards. Whether you're shopping for edgers, pavers, or wall blocks, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Build a beautiful border for your landscape with our interlock edgers on sale now through March 22nd. Save big on landscape block at Menards. Also, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on your landscape project at Menards. Whether you're shopping for edgers, pavers, or wall blocks, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Build a beautiful border for your landscape with our interlock edgers on sale now through March 22nd. Save big on landscape block at Menards. Also, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on your landscape project at Menards. Whether you're shopping for edgers, pavers, or wall blocks, Menards has the largest in-stock selection of concrete landscape block ready to take home today. Build a beautiful border for your landscape with our interlock edgers on sale now through March 22nd. Save big on landscape block at Menards. Also, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Here we are, guilty. Corey Richens. No murder weapon, no confirmed drug chain, a death certificate that still says undetermined, and yet the prosecution just got a conviction. Something worked. Let's talk about what, because she looked so innocent. Joining me to do just that, as always, my co-host Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, who, by the way, it's book launch day for him today, and this is out as of today. It's Not All About Me. Get it wherever books are sold.
We should send it to Corey.
We should. We'd send her an autographed copy, Robin, to the jail. She would love it.
Your next go around, Corey, employ everything that you read in this book.
Exactly.
She'll be baseline.
A totally changed person. If only she read it a few years ago. And Bob Mata, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, defense attorney. Bob, welcome. Let's start here.
Eric,
he told multiple people he thought his wife was trying to poison him 18 days before he died. How much do you think that dead man's warning had on the jury in terms of impact?
I don't think it hurt.
No.
I mean, I think if we're going to get down to brass tacks, I think the walk the dog letter did her in, like, overall. But I mean, those kind of dying declarations, or, you know, thoughts that your spouse is trying to kill you and putting it out there, to multiple people, is going to have an impact, because it at least shows that that's what he was kind of thinking. I mean, the question always becomes, was it said in jest, or was it said, you know, because when you look back and you're thinking, like, after the deed is done, right?
Yeah.
And you're thinking about it, and you look back on things, it changes the context, right? So, like, everybody that he would have said that to, even if he had said it, like, in a joking manner, it takes on a much more nefarious tone, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If he ends up dying, and then you kind of rethink it, when in the moment, you might not necessarily think anything of it other than he's just talking shit.
Well, yeah, it makes you wonder how much was he trying to, because I believe it was said that, like, the way it was said to friends was kind of in a joking manner. But yeah. you wonder, like, behind Eric, you know, behind, like, all of us have a mask of some sort to the world. And some are thinner and some are a lot thicker. But I'm thinking Eric might have been a thinner mask person, you know, but behind that mask, that facade of everything's okay, you know. Clearly, behind the scenes, he knew things were up. He moved his assets. He changed the beneficiaries. But it does make you wonder how much behind that mask he's sitting there going, yeah, you know, I'm kind of joking about this. And we all kind of, I know I use humor. I know you use humor, you know, to kind of deal with tough stuff. How much it was really landing with him thinking, yeah, I'm joking about this. But in reality, you know.
Yeah,
that's actually what's happening.
100%.
And so true, because that's also why, you know, everyone can see red flags in hindsight, but in the moment, we never believe the worst in people most of the time. And even though we've been, I mean, we actually had an episode where we even talked about this, all the red flags that weren't missed, they were just rationalized away potentially, except maybe by Eric, until it is too late and everyone does have that hindsight. But Bob, I'm really curious, Bob, we have so many points on this case, on the trial with the defense, the closings. So do you think this was a death by a thousand cuts, or was there any one or two glaring things to you? What do you think it was? And kind of, I won't keep throwing questions in. We'll just go one at a time.
No, yeah, I do. Because there was, I mean, again, if I pull the walk the dog letter out of this case, I still think she's probably getting convicted, but I don't think she's getting convicted in 2 hours and 40 minutes.
That was crazy.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that piece of evidence alone was so powerful because it was essentially a confession.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everything that, or it became such a thing that they had to try to tailor their defense around it, so that it didn't seem like it was actually a confession.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like, once that was out there, once the state had their hand on it, it then became incumbent upon the defense to say, you know what? The only way around this thing, because nobody's buying that it was, you know, a chapter in a 65-page book that you're writing, is to craft it as this is either the truth or do what I think the defense did, and I wasn't 100% clear as I was listening to closings yesterday, or what I was kind of saying, that I would take that approach wherein I'm saying, look, this is a woman who fully understands what she's facing. Mm-hmm. This is not, she is aware of all the evidence and what the case is against her, because at that point she had Sky Lazaro and her firm handling the case. Sky was her attorney at the time that this walk the dog letter dropped. And it became the impetus of Sky withdrawing because of conflict in her whole firm, which is entered Nestor and Lewis.
And I want to talk about that, because I need you to refresh me on this. There was something on Twitter the other day. Someone was asked, you had responded to somebody about just this, where it was, no, the original firm, Sky, the whole firm left. Remind me, what the hell happened there? Why did they leave? Do we know the exact details as to why they withdrew from the case?
No, not fully. I mean, basically what we had to glean from it is that the claim was that Sky and the firm had a conflict in a different case that was affecting their ability to be able to stay on that case.
Mm-hmm.
But what I recall, and this is on straight recollection, so do not take me to the bank on it.
Sure.
But I recall when the walk the dog letter became exposed, there was this thing that was being said out there that Corey had told people that Sky Lazaro was the one who had cooked the whole thing up. And so, you know, meaning, like, insinuating that Sky Lazaro, her attorney, was suggesting that they cook up witnesses, which there's no way that Sky Lazaro's doing
so
that.
It's like she was. So if that's true, That is it's par for the course for Corey. She turns on everybody, anybody, anything that's going to deflect from her actions. She knows no bounds, including destroying her own defense. I mean, I'm not surprised if that's you know what really went on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Do you think there's all those cuts by 1,000, you know, knives or cuts or whatever, and we have the walk the dog letter. Do you think that the closings that the prosecution did just threw kerosene on the fire? Do you think it was already going to go anyway?
It's funny you ask that. Going into it, but I've got that problem being a defense attorney. So
I know you do. That's right. You'll get excused.
from that lens and going into the closings, and I don't know if you saw the tweet, Tony, but my mindset was that most of the time, I think the reality is that jurors have already made their decision going into closings. Okay. Mm-hmm. Unless you have a case where it's close.
Yeah.
Or where the evidence isn't overly powerful in terms of actual evidence. Because what this case was an incredibly strong theory, a motive theory case that was impossible for the defense to get over. Because even though they lacked kind of the smoking gun evidence as to the ag murder and definitely as to the attempted murder, the story was so compelling and it fit so well that it would have led the jurors to think, all right, well, either this is the unluckiest woman in the world with this set of circumstances that's surrounding her, that her husband happens to die right at kind of the apex of everything raining down on her. The business is, just flailing. You know, she's got this relationship with this dude who she doesn't really care about, who she's using for his handyman skills to get all the work done on all the different properties that she is absolutely desperate to close on in order to keep funding the business. It's like if she's not closing on houses, she can't pay the mortgage payments on all the different properties. They're all going to go into foreclosure. So it's like this cycle was rolling. And then you add in her so desperate for the cash and she's committing the fraud and, signing up for the life insurance and stealing the HELOC money. It's like you'd have to believe that all of that was going on. And this was just a really, really unfortunate accident. Timing wise.
So Bob,
like how are you getting there?
You are famous for saying to me and other, and rightfully so, sometimes you can't possibly know her. The jury says they did.
Yeah.
Behaviorally, she had all those data points, right? They had enough data points that they said, we know you well enough.
Yeah. I've got long thoughts on that.
And, I know.
No, I know. I mean, the reality, man, is that I was disappointed in the length of time to deliberate a case like that. It's not necessarily for Corey's case in general. It's overall, mm-hmm. It's a civic duty that I think that 99.9% of people that are selected for jury duty take very seriously, mm-hmm. Because you've all heard it. You've probably said it. Oh, I got called in for jury duty. Like no one's happy about getting that thing.
Oh, I'm a freak. I like it.
you're never going to serve on a jury for the rest of your life. Now that you're doing this show.
Yeah. I mean, look, dude, the reality is everybody ends up enjoying it because it's such a unique experience. There's nothing like doing it. And when you get into the courtroom and the trappings of the court and the weight of what's going on, especially in a criminal case, more so than in civil, I feel, unless you've got, because civil's money, when you're talking about freedom in somebody's potential life, it's a heavier weight.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, and there's a lot of weight here. I mean, this is a mother of three children. Granted, there was no real definable care that she showed for these children over the course of this trial in any way, shape, or form.
You don't know her, Tony.
But there wasn't a whole lot that was that wasn't shown that way. I mean, and maybe there is something there. I don't know. But, I mean, that's usually somewhat of a weight on this. You wouldn't even know that she had children.
children had it not been like those videos of, well, the kids are in their bedroom as the body is being wheeled out of the house. Yeah. Do you think jurors, Bob, are getting, and I'm curious, you know, just historically on this, are they getting better at, and it to me speaks to the amount of time they spent in that room too, at pattern recognition and better at believing the capability of monstrous human beings? I mean, I would say years ago, some of these characters you see, and I think a lot of people go, that's impossible. That's so crazy. That's such an extreme. No one would do this. But I don't know, like you see Corey Richens. I mean, if you took the Corey Richens story and said, let's make a Lifetime movie out of it, it'd be like, yeah, let's pull this back a little bit because it goes a bit too far. Nobody's that stupid to do this. Surprise. Yeah. Do you think the juries are just like, there's so many people in the pool now that fit this sort of mold that they are, they're quicker to call them out and don't feel that they need to really debate this and run it into the ground 50 different ways to determine and call a spade a spade.
Yeah. Well, I think that there could be some, I don't know if I want to call it desensitization or if it's, you know, just kind of like an actual, I don't, but
it was like the Dateline effect, if you will. Yeah, I mean, the fact that
I want to give credit to the prosecutors, though, too.
Yeah.
Shit out of me. Like because every case is different. Every case has its own story. There is no fitting everyone into one kind of box. And like what you're suggesting is that.
We're also exposed to this type of material now and these stories of people where it used to be like, oh God, did you hear the movie, this crazy person? Now just go on any internet streaming service and you're going to find 50 true crime shows, all with variations of Corey Richens.
That's what I'm saying. Because we're desensitized to it, doesn't mean that you don't do the work.
Because
here's the thing. And now I'm going to get into my, you know, I'm going to pull out my soapbox and I'm going to stand on it for a minute. But I mean, here's the thing, man. We set up this government with the Constitution for a reason. And the way that it's set up is that, and I think that people sometimes lose sight of the fact that document is set up for us as the citizens to protect us from our government. And I want to make no bones about this, that our government is the prosecutor, it's the cops, that in the criminal justice world, that is the government. Mm-hmm. And we cannot get to the point where we're dealing with a trust me, bro type situation in juries.
Sure.
You know, because I'm getting to the point where I almost think that professional juries, people that are taught what the standard, what the burden means beyond a reasonable doubt, and people that just do it, that are educated on the system, they're educated on the burdens, what the burdens mean, and then we just let those folks do that for a living. They mm-hmm. literally will be the juries on cases because they've got, you know, you're always going to have that fear of bias, though, right? I mean, that's going to exist. That therein lies the rub with that. And then you've got to worry about, can anybody get to these people?
Yeah, that's what I'd be starting to worry about. That's where my mind went first on that. Is all right, so now they're going to be bought off.
Right. Those are the concerns because I could just tell you, T, from having done this for a long time, and Robin, that there was no substantive deliberation that took place in 2 hours and 40 minutes.
They're trying to figure out how to figure out the forms. Went in there long enough to, all right, how do we do these forms? How do we fill them out? We're done. We're set.
Right.
Bob, I'm curious, but kind of riffing on this a little bit, have you seen an evolution in lawyers? You know, so I think the juries are seen, I think they are exposed to more of shows like this. There's definitely more out there because, you know, when we were growing up, the only thing on TV was the four channels and there wasn't this.
Yep.
You know, and so our exposure to it was a lot of shock. When we saw cases like this, we were shocked. We're in disbelief. And so the Oh my God, I'm having flashbacks.
Ripped from the headlines.
So now people are going in there and they're actually doing things like we're doing. Is like, hey, I recognize this from this case, in this case, in this case, in this case, he was guilty, in this case, he was innocent. So they're making these connections. But also, have you seen an evolution though in the prosecutors as well as the defense attorneys that are better story weavers and able to relate those past experiences maybe than they used to be?
No, I do. I think the evolution, but I think it's more tech driven. Like you saw with Bloodworth's closing. I mean, it was a wonderful example of the power of demonstrative evidence. And
because he made it easy.
Made it very easy. And he laid it all out for him to read. Like it was a story, not much less of him telling it, more of him showing it. And he just laid it out, and he did a very good job, and it was a very.
I haven't seen as many closings, obviously, as you have, because that's what struck me about that closing, Bob, was that it was almost like, you know how you go to vote, and there's guys standing out front with the pre-form filled out for you. Hey, just vote like this. Yeah. It struck me the same thing. It's like, hey, here's how you guys can fill out the form. Here's all the elements. Just check the box. Is that a standard tactic that he did in the closing, or is that a little more unique?
It was a little more unique. You know, like the incorporation of the evidence that was presented in the case in the form of being able to do it like that, where you essentially have a PowerPoint presentation, is incredibly powerful, man. Because if you go back in history, like, you know, to my dad's era, to my early career, you know, I had a pad of paper and bullet points and I had written my closings, but you know, I wasn't reading from anything, and maybe we'd have one or two demonstratives, right. You know, whereas now you can highlight every high point, everything that you think that really struck home or should have struck home with the jury, and you're highlighting it. If you've got contradictions, you're able to put them right there and say, look, this is how we know she's lying. You know, this, you know, here's the walk the dog letter, and he did his Smugworth translation. That's what I called it. You know, like, so you're looking at what the thing says, and then he's translating through Corey's twisted mind what she's actually thinking, that this is what this really means. It was all really, really powerful. And, you know, and then when you look at the defense's closing and they're throwing up a Monopoly card, a chance card, the get out of jail free card.
I like the statues personally.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bloodworth wasn't completely highbrow because he had the elephant diarrhea one.
Yeah.
Which was funny, effective in terms of, I always fall back on the old, you know, in describing what circumstantial evidence is. I say, look, you go to bed.
Snow.
In the evening, correct. You look out your window, there's your grass is green. You wake up in the morning, it's covered with snow. You know it snowed overnight, even though you didn't see it. I thought it was like a really, really effective close for the state. And it was important because what I kind of dipped off, which I have a tendency to do when I was talking about going into these closings, I thought that this was a case where the closings might matter. You know, that if you had people on the fence, these closings could, for either side, push it either way. But again, that's what I'm saying. I'm looking through to a defense lens. I still, as I sit here today, while I believe that she's factually guilty, I still don't think they met their burden as to the ag murder, and definitely not on the attempt murder. Mm-hmm. You know, because the burden is high. That was a case that was driven on emotion. And it's a theory driven prosecution, meaning that they didn't have a ton of powerful evidence. Mm-hmm. They had all these little pieces that they were able to put together and create this theory that is incredibly plausible. And when they were able to get from plausible to really, really likely to, yeah, I think that's what happened. I feel pretty confident that happened. When they were able to get their theory locked down by plugging in what evidence they did have to that extent, I mean, it was fait accompli. So, but for me, if, you know, I'm looking at my chat, I'm looking at my Twitter, and it's funny, you know, because it's like you see the people that, you know, were hearing about the Corey Richens case for 3 years and fucking hated her, you know, which is, that's not how we do it. I get how people feel And sure. I get that people get this weird, bizarre vested interest in a case they have nothing to do with. Mm-hmm. I wish people would take a step back.
I think it because for so many people, Corey Richens reminds them of people. No, that's what did it for me. That's
not
what
just Richens, so it's like every case, dude.
There's a lot. Yeah, I mean, but I think if not everybody, I can't relate to every case. But there's certainly, I think that that's the reason why you get a lot of people that dig into some of these is because they see this, they see a reflection of insert X case here. In this case, we're talking about Corey Richens, and they see it. They see a reflection of it in their life in some way, shape, or form. Whether it's somebody that they knew or interacted with or whatever, and they feel more connected to it in that way, shape, or form. And I'm not it's right or wrong. It's just how people react. But that I think that there's more of that going on. And again, and I think it's also interesting. Kind of what I was going back to earlier of just the juries. Are they more apt to understand these cases better? Are they more to believe the depravity of some people? I mean, I'm noticing like just some of the language that gets used. Bloodworth used narcissistic injury in his closing arguments. I thought that was interesting. I mean, that's something that, I mean, I don't know that the average person really gets that concept. I mean, unless they listen to, because there's a lot of things that we started talking about on this show that really weren't out there very much. Narcissistic injury was one of them, and so was the hair follicle testing. And I noticed both landed in this trial. Yeah. But I think it's interesting that it's interesting how people will relate to these cases. And I think that connection that they make personally through that relation to their own lives is deeper and greater than it used to be. And I don't know what it says about society that we're all interacting with more people that are like Corey Richens or not, but I think it's what's going on.
I mean, I want to go. Maybe, yeah, man. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
look, we've seen the deaths of it, Tony.
Sure.
Yeah. It's one thing to be able to relate to it when it becomes a thing where it appears that somebody has a vested interest when they don't.
Yeah.
It's a different thing. It's one thing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's easy. I think for women that look, that are mothers and they see a case where this woman, like at the end of the day, the disregard for her children above all else.
Yeah.
Because these children have now been left without parents.
Yeah.
And it's all on her.
And it was pretty damning.
And her inability to be able to take into consideration the impact on her children's lives is unforgivable, right? Yeah. So, like, I think from that perspective, I think that it'll draw moms in a way where they'll feel it. They'll feel that ire, you know, deep inside of them because they just don't understand how somebody could do that to their kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, but like it gets on a different level, though.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like people like talking about how they hate people they don't know. It's just
sure.
To me, it's a lot.
Corey Richens was a buffet of wrong, and everybody could kind of pick out what they wanted off the buffet and go, oh, I like salad. Like, I like the pork chops. I like people are like she offered a little something to everybody in a lot of ways. That's the prosecution of Corey Richens. We're going to get into the more of the defense of Corey Richens here. Give us your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube and Substack. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.